The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding. Thank you for choosing to spend some time with me here this morning. And of course, I'm a week late on the sports stuff. There was a little football game in Ames. And you know, like I've said, in that particular rivalry, because I went to Oklahoma State, it's kind of the same thing. It's the ag school, the sort of little brother in the state, that kind of stuff. So I kind of cheer for Iowa State, but I didn't get to watch much of it because I was at volleyball. But I miss that Oklahoma State-Oklahoma game, even though, because they don't play it anymore. When they went to different conferences, they decided not to play it. But we had a pretty lopsidedly bad, it's the most lopsided record in all of college football. It was like 75-22 or something. Pretty bad. Anyway, then Oklahoma State got pummeled 69-3. So the one thing is, I don't have to make any time this year to watch any Oklahoma State football. I will be able to not worry about it at all because I'm not watching. And I mean, I can't do it. We're back to where square one, where we were before Gundy got there. I don't know what happened, but the thing just fell apart. Maybe it's time for Mike Gundy to go, and I don't know who's going to take that job. But yeah, anyway, so hopefully the Cyclones and the Hawkeyes will win a bunch more games, and good for both of them. But it is fun. It's just, you know, the whole Cyclones-Hawkeyes thing, not every state has it, you know. Like, Ohio State doesn't have anything like it. Nebraska doesn't. Missouri doesn't. Illinois doesn't. Texas kind of, with Texas Tech A&M, kind of does. But that's such a big state with so many schools, it's kind of not the same thing. But when you have a small state, population-wise, a small state with two major universities, both of who are Division I, it's an interesting and unique rivalry. I think Michigan State is on that level. Florida and Florida State, for sure, even though it's not a small state, but they're so far above everyone else in that state that those two schools, well, I mean, there's Miami, I guess. But yeah, Florida State, because it's just, you know, you think about it, you look around, I mean, Arkansas doesn't have it. Kansas and Kansas State, they got it. But it's cool. It's sort of unique in college football to have that sort of a thing where you have these two schools that are at least very competitive with each other and are playing at the same level. So it's kind of fun. I don't think the other states kind of are where, I mean, it does not matter where you go in Iowa. If you go into a grocery store, there's going to be either Iowa merch, Iowa State merch, or both. And so it's just interesting. It's kind of cool. It's fun. I wish I could have watched a little more of the game, but I was busy watching my daughter play volleyball. She has changed over to libero for her senior year, and she's really enjoying that. So she was a hitter, and now she's playing libero. My youngest daughter is still hitting. So yeah, it's volleyball season, and volleyball season carries on through. My oldest daughter, Sydney, will not play club this year because she's a senior and she's not going to play in college. So that'll be the first time she hasn't played club since, oh my goodness, 6th, 7th grade, something like that. And my oldest daughter has 3 more club seasons. Not that I'm counting them, or 2 more, wait. Oh, no, 2 more, right. Sophomore and junior, she will not play club her senior. So we only have, after this, we only have 1 more club season. And it's one of those things where it'll be really nice not to get up and drive to Omaha on President's Day weekend and spend the whole weekend there running to and from volleyball. But again, it does go back to that thing I was talking about last week there, where this is clearly life transition time for us. And, you know, it's just, I'm going to terribly, terribly miss my daughters as far as being around them and watching them and doing things. But the level of participation that it takes to do the things that they've done has become a little bit exhausting. And the thing is, I was so late having our kids. My wife and I were older when we had our kids. I was 38 when I had my oldest, and 40 when I had my youngest. So I will be 58 when my youngest graduates high school. And I figure I'll be 68 when she has, I mean, she may or may not have a kid by 28, you know, sometime, and we didn't. But it could be that I could be 78 by the time my grandkids are even born. And so that'd be a tough go. But, you know, life is what it is. You do these things the way you do them, and you have these choices. And we did some things when I lived in Australia, and some traveling into places like Indonesia and places that I've gone that you just wouldn't take kids. And if you were to try to do them now, you could do them, but you wouldn't really be, you know, as comfortable staying in like a youth hostel or, you know, like some of the accommodations that we were able to, or were by necessity staying in at that age, since we didn't have any money. You wouldn't really want to do those. So I'm kind of glad I did them, but it's always like, I wonder what would have happened if I'd had kids at 30. But, you know, I was in the middle of my residency, and it would not have been a good time for that either, because then you're working, you know, back then we could work 100 hours a week and there was no hours. Like now, when you finish medical school and you go into residency, there's hours that you can't work more than 80 hours a week. I mean, we work well over 100 hours every week in the hospital, spending the night three nights a week. And so you do three 36-hour shifts and then two or three 12-hour shifts. And so you end up with a lot of time in there. But so it's definitely that time. And I definitely I'm kind of looking forward to not doing club volleyball. I'm certainly looking forward to not having two club volleyball seasons coming up and just having the one. Because last year we had to go to Wisconsin Dells twice for tournaments. I went once and my wife went once. And it's just a lot. Yeah, so one of my good friends' moms had a knee replacement, and he was telling me all about the technique that they used, and, you know, they don't cut the tendon and they do this and that and that. And I just wanted to talk a little bit of maybe nuts and bolts about when they say they don't cut the tendon. Well, what they do is they cut the muscle. I mean, there's no getting into the knee without cutting something. It's not a possibility. And you can't, I mean, the knee is inside a muscle and tendon sheath called the quadriceps, and then the capsule, and then you have the ligaments on the side. I mean, there's just no, you can't get around that you have to cut things. So I think that's an important thing for people to note, because people always say, oh, they don't cut the tendon. Well, okay, so they cut the muscle. So, and it's not that, there were some studies that show that the early results on these sort of mini invasive, and there's all these different names for them, that the early results in the first 2 or 3 weeks are a little bit less painful. But you have to balance that with the fact that consistently in the literature, and there have been some big, big studies done on this, there's consistently a higher rate of not getting the components exactly where they're supposed to be, because number one, you're not getting as good of a view of the knee if you're kind of trying to slide in, you know, through a more minimal opening. And the other is you're almost certainly going to use non-robotic technology. And there's just, you know, I've said it before, the analogy would be, you know, your car now versus the car you had 30 years ago with no navigation and no, you know, maybe you had a CD player. You know, there certainly wasn't anything to tell you that when you were turning lanes that, you know, no beeps that say, hey, there's a car in your blind spot. Certainly was no of the corrective mechanisms now they have, where if you're sliding out of your lane, some of the cars will push you back into the lane. Like all of these things, airbags, I mean, all of that stuff. I guess I had airbags 30 years ago, but all of these things together make it very difficult to argue that today's cars are not safer than the cars 30 years ago. Now, does that mean people that got in car accidents 30 years ago always got, you know, were more injured? Or, you know, I don't know. But certainly, and it's hard to say, well, on an aggregate scale, are there fewer accidents now because of all these safety things? I don't know. I think that would be very statistically difficult to come up with that answer appropriately. It would just take such a large number of, I mean, you'd have to just really follow, because you can't say, well, this state had this number of accidents. I mean, there's so many variables. How many people are driving? What's the age of the people driving? What kind of cars are they driving? It'd be an almost impossible study to do. But I can tell you that if you're in a modern car with all these accident prevention things, I think you're going to have less chance of getting in an accident. I was driving with my daughter the other day, and she was we were on the highway, and, you know, I looked over in her mirror, and I didn't see anything, and she signals, and as soon as she turned the signal on, you got a beep, beep, there's someone in your blind spot, and then you look back and you can see it. Of course, I always tell them to look back. So all of these technological advances are not for nothing. There's reasons for them all, and they all help in different things. And so the robot, so what the robot does, and I think it's hard to really understand, because it's not just, oh, okay, the robot cuts exactly where you want. That's true. And there's no question at all that if you look at the old, or the non-robotic, I guess, way of doing it, there's navigation as well, which is kind of, I don't know, it's a whole different topic. But navigation is going to be closer to robotic. But then traditional total knee replacement, which is the vast majority that are still done, not just in Iowa, but everywhere. And why is that? Well, there's a cost involved in doing the robot. And St. Anthony's has told me when I first got here, well, we want the best. What's the best? I said, well, the robot's the best. They said, well, buy the robot. And then on each case, you know, the hospital's going to make less money because they have to pay for some of these things, like the reflective devices that reflect the infrared back to the robot. And there's the extra expense of a CT scan. So it's definitely a more expensive procedure for the hospital, but it doesn't cost the patient anymore. So the hospital just makes a lower profit margin per case. But St. Anthony's has decided that in order to give the optimal patient care, that they're willing to make a little bit less on each case and willing to invest, you know, $1.5 million on this robot. The robot is, so two big differences. One is you are more accurate in your understanding of the anatomy, because not only are you working with a CT scan, but instead of literally, I kid you not, eyeballing some of the things, like you've put this jig in there and you're going to screw the jig into the bone and then you're going to cut the saw through the jig. Some of the stuff you're literally just eyeballing. Well, that looks right. And again, you know, the total knee replacement is a very good, very reproducibly good operation. And 85% of patients with traditional knee replacements are either satisfied or very satisfied, but it's 95% with a robot. So it's marginally better. It's 10% better, but 10% is a lot of patients if you're doing a bunch in a year. That's, you know, if you're doing, and you know, I do a little over 100 a year, used to do almost double that. And if you have 10 more patients that are not as happy as you would like them to be in a year, that can stack up on you. So, but you're not cutting the same, you're not doing the same operation, because the traditional way is to align the bones mechanically, cut them where they're mechanically in alignment, and then release ligaments and tendons until you get it to balance out. And that's called ligamentous balancing. And that is the part that is inherently more of an art or a skill than a science. With the robot, there's so much less of that, because you're literally putting the knee where you want it, exactly where you want it. You're taking what is essentially a photograph with the robot, using the infrared data that's feeding back, including the three-dimensional CT scan. And you're saying, this is where I want to cut it in order to have this amount of ligamentous tension. And, you know, it's not perfect, but it's just so much more accurate to the patient's anatomical needs. And it's, and so, like I said, it's what we call kinematic alignment. It's closer to what we call kinematic alignment, meaning the alignment is based on the movement of the knee rather than mechanical alignment, which is where the alignment of the knee, well, of the knee that you've put in, is based on the mechanical alignment. In other words, dropping a plumb line from the center of the hip to the center of the ankle and making sure that goes through the middle third of the knee. That is a way of doing it, and it's very successful. But the robotic way of doing it is to say, all right, so this knee is sitting here, and this is the ligamentous tension we want. This is where we want this knee to sit. Let's cut it exactly there. So it's a different principle that you're operating under. And the execution of your plan is more accurate. I mean, they used to say that any measurement less than 3 degrees on the traditional way of doing it, which is just the metal jigs that attach either inside or outside your bone, and then you kind of eyeball them, any measurement less than 3 degrees is not possible to do because of the limitations of the equipment itself. Whereas now we can make a 1 degree or a 1 millimeter change. And as a matter of fact, they had to start making the knee replacement plastics. So we put metal on the femur, on the end of the femur bone, the thigh bone, and metal on the end of the tibia or the shin bone. And then we put a plastic piece in between that. So you have a metal and plastic sandwich. And they used to only make those in 2 millimeter increments. Well, now they make them in 1 millimeter increments. And that's because the level of accuracy that we can get, and we can get 1 degree of rotation, we can get 1 degree of angulation, we can get 1 millimeter of change. Like I can go back and cut exactly a millimeter if I want to make an extra cut after, you know, if I say, well, it's a little bit tight, let's cut it. And that almost never happens. Almost always I plan for and use a 9mm polyethylene plastic insert. If I use an 11, I think, wow, that's rare. It used to be, you know, 9 was the plan, and sometimes you'd use a 16 or an 18 because you had to just keep loosening up ligaments and adding plastic until the knee felt right. And, you know, and even feeling right, you know, there's some judgment there. Even, you know, the way I do it, there's some judgment into how it feels. But I don't ever have to, I think once, maybe twice in the last 5 years, which is, you know, 500 or so knees, that I've had to do what's called a manipulation under anesthesia, where we take a patient whose knee is not bending properly and bend it for them. It's just, you know, a recent one that I did was because the patient already had a 15-degree lack of extension, so she couldn't get her knee straight for 15 of those last degrees, and we didn't get that back in the operating. We got it back in the operating room, but she wasn't able to maintain it because all her ligaments were shortened, so I had to manipulate her. But a standard knee replacement, getting a manipulation now in my hands is an absolute rarity, where it used to be regular. So people say, oh, well, I had to go back in and have my knee pushed on. Well, we just don't have to do that because we've aligned the knee properly to your own anatomy in a way where your ligament tension, the stretchiness of the ligaments is exactly where we want it as soon as we make the bone cuts with the robotic arm. And I know it's, you know, it's a tough concept to kind of understand, but if you go online and you look at Mako Robot, M-A-K-O, it's the Mako, like the Mako Shark, Mako Robot that we use, it makes so much sense. And I can just tell you that the application of it is as good as the sense that it makes. So, yeah, just wanted to go over that again. I know I kind of beat that drum a lot, but it's a hard concept. I know everybody doesn't listen every week, so I don't know who's heard it 10 times and who's heard it 5 and 3 and maybe not at all if you're a new listener. But I want people to understand, you know, why we're doing what we're doing and what we think the advantages are. And that's that. It's a whole different concept of a knee replacement with a different technique that you're using with a different method of putting it in, and a knee replacement itself that is able to be changed by 1 millimeter instead of 2 once you've got it in. It's just, there's a lot to it, but I could probably go into a little bit more detail next week. Anyway, have a wonderful fall, and I'll be back next week, and have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.